your vats cry on camera, Mike?
I think I have, you know. Yes, I have. I have. In a short film, in a tender moment in a short film.
Oh.
I think I had to mist up a little.
And did you did you call on painful memories?
Nope. What do you channel?
Nope, I have a heart of ice. So what I did was just not blink.
Yes, there's nothing there, is there? Yeah.
I simply didn't blink for a bit.
The Stanislavski technique is, it can't work on you, can it? Because Stanislavski, the great acting guru,
yeah,
as I understand it, had two main sort of concepts for the revolutionized acting in the early part of the last century.
Yeah.
One was channel your own inner pain and stuff. You know, if you're, for example, you're playing Macbeth, the situation you'll find yourself in as an actor is, you'll go, have I been the King of Scotland? Mm-hmm. So there's actually two choices you can make at that point. If you have.
Which many actors have, let's not forget. James McAvoy particularly was a rule of terror.
Absolutely brutal. Yeah. Well, I think he took a lot of his experience from filming The Last King of Scotland, which is about Idi Amin, didn't he? He took a lot of that stuff.
Yes. Well, he thought that when he signed up for that job, he was becoming the King of Scotland.
Well, that's why there's a lot of confusion over that whole film title.
So, yeah, so in that situation, obviously, Mike is in trouble because he, as far as I'm aware, has never been the King of Scotland.
Yeah, unless that's actually happened to you, then what you do is you look for the nearest experience you've had in your own life to being the King of Scotland, and that's what you then channel.
Which for me is probably being selected to be scorer for the under-13s cricket 11. I think that's close as I've come to a sort of captaincy leadership role.
Yeah, so essentially, that's how acting works. Now, for Mike, Stanislavski, so his two things were, one was use your own emotional experience, and I believe it's Stanislavski who also said that if there's a play going on, no matter how good it is, if a live cat was to be released onto the stage, that's all anyone would look at and watch. Do you understand?
Also works for a turkey or a snake.
Set.
If they've got the correct acting training, yes.
Even a moth with the right lighting. Immensely distracting.
Well, that's how so much theatre lighting was invented, was trying to light Stanislavski's moths. And if you've read the book Stanislavski's Moths, you'll know all about that. But that was where the whole thing of the roving spotlight.
Yeah, they're best backlit, aren't they?
they're best backlit. The paradox with the moth... of course, with lighting a moth, is that the moth will be drawn to the light itself. At that point, what you're then doing is projecting a massive silhouette of a moth onto the wall of a theatre.
And that was the beginning of cinema, wasn't it?
The first audiences shrieked in terror and evacuated the building, didn't they?
Yeah.
Because they thought there was a mega moth.
They thought there was a mega moth in the building.
Trying to break through the walls.
So hang on. So Stanislavski's principles. Number one, try and access your inner pain. Number two.
Yeah. Well, number two, I think the point he was making was, and I think it is a bit of a...
You've got to be more entertaining than a cat.
You've got to be more entertaining than an actual cat. And that I think, you know, it's a bit of a... I think actors find that a bit insulting. It's, you know, it's a bit...
Do you think that's why Lloyd Webber made cats as a kind of loophole?
It's the ultimate safety measure.
It was sort of, he was trying to double bluff.
He was so riddled with paranoia that a cat would steal his thunder.
Yeah. He said, what if the cast are cats?
What if I make Elaine Page into a cat?
And that's why to this day, you know, cats are not allowed to buy, or not able to buy tickets for West End shows or even fringe theatre.
And they've removed all the cat flaps from stage doors.
No, but the point he was making, I think, was that, you know, you've got to make it real as an actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're on stage, you know, using lots of bombast and pomp, and you know,
my usual tools,
the two heartiest of and most dependable arrows in Mike's quiver, pomp and bombast,
alongside dancing and blue jokes, you have the two arrows.
Sometimes I'll fire all four at the same time.
Yes. Bombastic, pompous, blue dance.
That, you know, the show's going really bad. He's losing the audience. If he has to pull that out, that'll be you're in.
You know, I'm panicking.
So that's right. So whereas the cat, you see, is being authentic.
Mm.
The cat is being truthful to itself, no matter what it's doing. But whatever it's doing, that'll be more compelling than, you know.
Than my acting.
Than Mike's acting. No.
That's what Stanislavski said, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, even the greats, you know, a Michael Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoever it is, the audience will just be... But I think it's true. The audience will be going, what the fuck's that cat doing here?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's because it's not meant to be there, isn't it? That's why it's...
Yeah, because I think you could also argue probably equally that if you went to a cat show...
Mm. Yeah.
And...
And Mike turned up and started licking his own anus.
Uh-oh. Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Hey, hey, hey.
I draw the eye.
Yeah, exactly. I think actually the point works both ways.
Which is why it's so clever.
Yeah, which is why to this day Stanislavski is such a towering figure in all of our lives.
So I can't remember how we got onto that.
I can't remember how we got onto it either. Oh, yes, no, that's it. The point I was making was that Mike, of course, has no history of emotional experience at all to draw on. Because he is the man of granite.
The Tin Man.
He is the Tin Man.
So this is series 4.
Blimey, mate.
Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought we'd be recommissioned
again? It's amazing how much... it's amazing to be up for series 4, isn't it? I mean, how many things get a fourth series? And I like to think that one day we might even have it so that it says S401 and stuff on the actual episodes.
Do you want that?
You'd like that?
I want that, yeah. And actually, I'm saying that in a slightly... I'm trying to say it in a slightly passive-aggressive way because it's been a bit of a bugbear of mine for a while.
Okay, hang on. Let's start series 4 off with a bit of internecine... Pompadour beef.
A bit of... I think internal bean strife might be the theme of this series.
Yeah. I mean, season 4 is going to be obviously different. But we're different people now, a month on. Like, the audience can't expect us to be the same people we were back in January.
That's a good point.
Ben's had a haircut.
I've had a haircut.
I've got a slight cold.
Oh.
And Mike's exactly the same.
Well, Mike, another thing about Mike is... which it may be linked to his inner granite nature emotionally, is the fact that his cells don't reproduce.
No.
He's got the same cells.
As I did the day I was born. They just swelled slightly.
They swell. But it's, most of us, all our cells reproduce, don't we? So it's true, like, that actually you're a different person, aren't you? Like a year later or whatever.
Is it every 4 years?
Something like that. Except for your brain...
Oh, really?
Your brain cells don't reproduce.
Do they not?
You're stuck with that.
No.
No. So if you get a few clonks on the bonce or have a bit of a skinful and kill a few of them...
Oh, no.
Back. There's no replacements.
Oh, God.
That's it. You're just slowly whittling down.
I feel like my brain now is more useful than it was when I was born.
Some would argue that when you were born, you had full wisdom because you were thinking without language.
I was Stanislavski's cat.
Exactly.
I was Elaine Page in Cats.
But basically, imagine Elaine Page, but just covered in sort of blood and sputum. So, no.
Is sputum the right word?
No.
Why are we imagining that?
I think Henry imagines I was born and then people started hocking up loogies and spitting them onto my...
Spit onto the witch boy, quickly.
Blow your nose on his soft baby hair.
Quickly, encrust him in sputum so that Satan can't get back in. Quickly. Unless Satan's already in, which case he's trapped in forever. But that's the risk you take with the sputum husk.
We'll be able to work it out. By the time he's 6 or 7 years old, we'll know if the devil's in or out.
You could be just creating a sort of green sort of devil's igloo.
So, Henry, sorry, I know that I'm dragging us back. Why do you want us to label each episode S401 for this one, for example?
I think it's quite nice to go into the, you know, when you're looking at it in whatever app you use, if it says, you know, S401, like Series 4, Episode 1, or Series 4, Episode 5. I've looked at that in the past when I've listened to true crime podcasts and stuff. I've gone, oh, I'm in Series, you know, 7, Episode 12, or whatever.
And you felt good about yourself?
I did, and we're just saying to people it's the fourth series, but, you know, what does that really mean unless there's an S4 in there? Do you know what I mean? Because we don't have the benefit of an introductory credits.
We could make one.
We bloody could, couldn't we?
Did we not try on the very first episode?
Did we?
Or did we try it and then maybe we lost it?
What did it say?
I don't know. I certainly remember us having a go the first time and not particularly knowing what we were doing and knowing how to do it. Hey, everybody. Hi, welcome to Three Bean Salad. I'm Mike.
I'm Ben.
Hello, Henry.
Oh, my God.
I think we tried. It was pretty agonizing stuff.
I mean, I would still prefer that to the current way we start.
Which is just shambling nonsense. Yeah. Obviously, look, the genre, the medium is evolving as we speak. That's why it's such a vital time to be alive, isn't it? And that we're at the forefront of this whole movement, this brand new medium. It's like
a mere 10 years behind some of the earliest podcasts.
I mean, there hasn't been, I think, such a thrill running through society since the introduction, I would say, I think, of dot matrix printers in the in the late 80s. Where it's changing the way people think. And, you know, you're either with it, you're either dot matrixed up, or you are bye-bye, Jimbo. You are...
You're getting monks to write stuff out for you.
Yeah, essentially. You're basically illuminating the letter I for a fortnight. Meanwhile, I've printed off a bloody dissertation. Do you know what I mean?
About the future.
About the future and how important I'm going to be in it. But, you know, it's like, or I suppose it's like the salons and cafes of Weimar Germany, is it? I don't know. You know, ideas are in flux.
Mike is dressed as Hindenburg.
the person or the
airship.
Disaster.
Well, he's doing a sort of satirical dance where he's dressed both as the person and the airship. And it's a comment.
Yeah,
on the future of Germany.
So at the moment, currently, you're feeling, Henry, that for the first time in the world's history, a man is able to sit on his ass on a chair in Chiswick and be at the vanguard of something at the same time. And the way to express that would be to put S4.
Well, it's one of...
E1.
It's one
if,
of...
If we don't do that, then it's not clear just what you're doing for language, for ideas...
Okay, a lot of people, you know, your tone is a little bit sarcastic there. I think a lot of people are probably quite sarcastic when that guy put a urinal in an art gallery. Yeah? So, putting a urinal in an art gallery. What does that mean? Well, we're still discussing it, aren't we?
So. I sort of feel like in the world of podcasting, where Sarah Koenig's serial podcast... Put a urinal in an art gallery. Three Bean Salad is pissing in it.
Okay. And it ain't plumbed in, baby. No, but that's the thing, you know, you use the limits of your own medium become where you express yourself. So is it S403 or not becomes actually quite a big deal, potentially.
So can I just put forward my manner of thinking?
Yeah.
When I uploaded the first episode, obviously I had that decision to make. Do I put S1, E1?
Yeah. Oh, that's it, yeah.
Or do I leave it more ambiguous, more... It's evolving. It's not something you can pin down. It's
indefinable space.
Yeah.
Yes.
It transcends time.
That's
it transcends the idea of seasons.
Mm.
Okay. Oh, actually, that's interesting. A seasonal approach.
We could call this season Spring 2022.
Yeah. Spring.
Spring.
Early spring. Three Bean Salad. Look outside. What do you see? The crocuses are beginning to express their buds a little.
The daffodils are aflutter.
And the glorious, glorious worms. The worms.
The worms are finally on the wing. Coming out of hibernation.
flying right at
to
you.
To gather meat for their young.
Massing around your nostrils and eyes.
To try and seek a warm and moist place in which to cocoon themselves.
For the next 45 years.
Before expressing 20,000 eggs.
The beautiful cycle of nature continues. What's that you see in the neighbouring garden? Oh, the old lady who lives next door is entirely covered in ants. You can barely see her for all the ants. Scurrying over her.
That's the only meal they'll need this year.
And and they will also eat her clothes, her shoes, but not her glasses. Those will be fought over by crows.
Okay, it's time to turn on the bean machine and find out what the topic is for this week.
Okie dokie.
Okay, this week's topic is sent in by Luke in Hertfordshire, and it is dinosaurs.
Here's a sign of aging. I overheard a conversation the other day, and it was a guy saying, they were talking about something that was like dinosaurs or something, and the guy went, "Yeah, God, it's like bloody Jurassic World."
Oh no!
Yeah,
that is
exactly.
That's a sea change, isn't it?
That's a sea change.
So, what age was this person that Jurassic Worlded it? When was that was out a few years ago, was it?
That's at least 5 years old now.
Yeah,
I would say
Jurassic World. Well, I've lost track of the Jurassics, but you know, it's but yeah, that was his go-to.
Unless what they were talking about was something that they were likening to a specific moment in Jurassic World that doesn't happen in Jurassic Park. For example, Chris Pratt being able to control velociraptors with his hands.
Is that happening on Physics High Street at the time?
Well, I think someone was controlling something with their hands because they were in a restaurant.
Okay, so he was using his cutlery.
He may have been using his cutlery, and he may have been saying, "Bloody hell, this is like Jurassic World, what I'm doing here."
Combination of hand manoeuvres and whistling.
I've actually not seen Jurassic World. Is that what happens? Does he remote controls them using sign language?
Sign language?
Or sign language. he doesn't use sign language.
Yes. Is it that he is a... Mike, I can't quite remember, but he has some skills. Like, is he a hunter or he's got horses at home?
I think he possibly, yeah, he grew up with dogs or something, big dogs.
He's got kind of... So he can talk to animals.
He's at one with the animals. He's a muscular Doolittle.
Yes.
Is the idea.
Okay.
To a degree.
And he can Doolittle even dinosaurs, but not the big one.
The T-Rex?
No, it's a T-Rex that they've somehow crossbred with a bigger T-Rex and a frog. Is that right, Mike? There's definitely a frog involved.
There is a bit of sort of genetic exposition at some point. That I think the best thing to do is to just sort of tune out and chew back in, and not sort of worry too much about
a little, when I went to the cinema, some text came up saying, "This is the moment you can go to the toilet."
Exactly.
Won't change anything. They'll just, you know.
Yeah, but we felt we had to put it in.
Yeah.
She's got the mind of a frog.
There's only one way this T-Rex could be any more terrifying. That's if it had the mindset and general attitude of a frog. No! Don't, you fools! You fools! I warned you! No! It was the one thing that humanity must never do. To give a giant lizard the general attitude, vibe, and approach to things of a frog.
What the hell's in this bucket, Reinhard? What's in this bucket? It's tad dinosaurs, isn't it? Tell me the truth now.
The tad rexes are coming. Oh, look, that glass of water, it's slightly shaking a little bit. Is that because a T-Rex is approaching? No, it's something far worse than that.
look into the glass of water. There's three Tadrexes frolicking.
No!
Tyrannosaurus spawn.
Why are these T-Rexes suddenly trying to cross major roads? Because they've got the mindset of a frog, you fool!
So I think the story in Jurassic World, Henry, although I can't remember, it was quite a good fun. I enjoyed it. Was that they thought this time they could do it safely. So they went back and went...
Which, to be fair, is a strong argument, isn't it? Well, this time we'll be careful. Is that what they
said? I think that's it, isn't it, so Mike? What, that they sort of go, yes, there was a huge disaster, but we've worked out how to deal with this.
They raise the hubris stakes.
Yeah.
They make the same mistakes all over again. I think the main safety element they chose.
I think it's railings, isn't it? More railings.
It was a combination of railings, and there were no more soft-top cars going about. No more open Jeeps. Everyone was in a glassy pod.
That's right, they're in like a glass sphere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, a five-minute just safety talk before you go on the ride, like they do at Monkey Kingdom. You've been to that?
Yeah. And you have to wear the high-visibility tabards as well and sturdy shoes.
Yeah.
I've never been to Monkey Kingdom, Henry.
Oh, it's called Monkey Kingdom, or it's called Apevania, or like, or like Gorilla Land, or something. It's a thing where you take kids, and they go. I went there with my nieces once, and they attach you to bits
go
of rope.
Ape.
And
then I know this. I
go
know
ape,
this well.
And you walk around. They're all
over the place.
And you walk around in the trees.
Someone has to say, "Okay, guys."
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So look, trees are not toys. These trees, you might think these trees are more scared of you than you are of them. That's actually not, it shouldn't be true. You should be more afraid of them than they are of you.
Their bark is worse than their bite because they can't bite.
Some barks will give some people a rash. But usually not.
Now go out, enjoy yourselves within reason and enjoy the gentle wisdom of these static but yet very much alive.
Pre-tables, pre-wardrobes.
For millennia, humanity has enjoyed a truce with the tree people. They will remain static and will provide a tithe, a certain percentage of their population for us to use as wardrobes, side tables.
In exchange, all they ask is that we put some of their children in straight plastic tubes.
Now go and enjoy yourselves.
That guy, yeah, he would have been there, yeah.
You'd need him.
He would have been there, yeah, running the theme park, definitely.
And then I think, Henry, I don't want to spoil the film for you or any of our listeners, so if you haven't seen Jurassic World, look away now. Things don't quite go to plan.
What?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Which is a real shame, because I am ready now for a movie where everything just goes to plan.
I know what you mean, actually.
When it's all just absolutely fine.
So the horror film where people don't take the shortcut?
Yeah, of course not, because it's very poorly lit. There are rumours of, I don't know, man leopards on the loose, and they make sure they've got plenty of fuel in the car and a bottle of water and a fully charged phone.
So it'll be a lot of films where people decide to stay in an Ibis.
Rather than risk it, yeah, and go the next day when it's light.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to watch a film where people act the way that I live, please.
Hey, kids, why don't you come and stay in my cabin in the woods? It's fine. Don't stay in your car overnight. Come in my cabin. No, thanks. We'll stay in the car.
Your Airbnb ratings are appalling, so no thank you.
Yeah, and actually there is an Ibis. If we just go back a mile, there's an Ibis.
We're just going to go to the Ibis.
£59.
24-hour vending machine.
Yeah. So, yeah, you enjoy the cabin, but we're off.
Yeah.
End of film?
End of film. Lovely.
Even other genres it could work for, like, you know. So, you know. There's a serial killer on the loose. This person seems to be a real freak. There's doing really some really, really grim stuff to people. You're on the case. And he's like, you know, I've actually decided I'm going to just take a couple of weeks off and just check into an Ibis instead of researching this case.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's in the Ibis. He gets to use all the Ibis facilities. Just has a good solid couple of weeks. So you'd watch him.
A really decent shower.
Yeah, so you'd watch him showering, having breakfast.
Probably. Yeah, he's got some channels that he can't get at home.
He goes down to the desk and he just says, oh, the little shower gel dispenser's out of shower gel, and they say, we'll send someone up.
He's run out of tiny milks. They give him some more, you know. It's a dream come true.
And then he opens the wardrobe. Oh. It's full of Tad Rexes.
Tad Rexes, no. No, they've infiltrated.
You've ruined it.
They've infiltrated the IBIS system.
They've infiltrated a different genre.
They've crossed genre. I think that, you know, like, the amount of... I think it's, you know, we all agree now that essentially culture has ended. We're now in a never-ending repetition of just franchises. It's all franchise-based. It's what we wanted. It's the pret-a-manger-ification of culture. It's happened.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're now in... So, you know, this guy, when this guy said to his friend, I overheard, going, you know, sort of like Jurassic World. You know, that's how we're going to measure time now, is in terms of where in the franchise you place
cycles,
yourself.
Recastings and rebootings. Exactly. It's rebootings. It's not eras, it's rebootings. Is that what it is?
Yeah, so in the future people will go...
Which Spider-Man cycle did you grow up in?
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm an Andrew Garfield child.
I'm a Mike Wozniak.
Oh.
Hello.
From my doomed early 80s Spider-Man reprisal.
Yep. Which we don't talk about very often, but...
But we do know a lot of the listeners are here because of that, so...
Yeah. And you still go to... You still have to turn up at the...
The cons.
The Comic-Cons and stuff. Yeah. The cons, well, I do. Don't you, Mike?
And there was no special effects back then, so I still have the spider bite scars.
And you still, I believe, have a sack of spiders, of which you birth several thousand spiders a year still, don't you?
Yes, I take myself away to an ibis when that happens. Yeah. Very accommodating about it.
Yeah,
they put me into a room with a sort of wet room bathroom, so it's easier to clear up, and so they've got somewhere to scuttle away.
Yeah,
they just ask that I change the ibis each time, so they're not all birthed in the same location.
And it's a lovely spring thing, isn't it? Because that's another thing of spring. Because it won't be long now, will it? It's around about now.
The spring bursting. Yeah, no, well, it's probably exactly coming. I think it's probably going to be a bit earlier this year than usual.
Yes.
I'm expecting any day now.
Is a fossil a like an indentation left behind by something? Like, is it like a, or is it actually a thing? Do you know what I mean?
I thought it was the thing. That's a good question, though.
I think it's that the bones. Oh no! I'm about to reveal. I've got no idea. But I think the bones turn to something else, don't they? I don't know. I've lost.
I can feel you losing confidence. Yeah. But none of us started this confidently, anyway. To be honest, it's always disheartening when you discover a basic word that you felt that you understood the meaning of.
It is, isn't it?
And the smallest bit of scrutiny reveals that actually there's no understanding at all.
We've got an email, the sort of about this.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
This is from David from Belfast.
Okay.
He doesn't describe us as three dinosaurs, does he? I'm not ready to hear that email yet.
So basically he says that there was something lacking in season 3.
Oh. God.
Which I thought was a bold way to start an email.
Well, okay, can I just preempt this and say, why don't you just go and f*** yourself? Yeah? Maybe that was what was missing. Was you.
I wish you'd been a barrister, Henry. I really wish, in the highest courts of the land, every single time your adversary objected to something. I would love to see that.
Objection. The council has again asked me to f*** myself. it's literally wasting everyone's time.
Counter-objection. He's not f***ing himself. I told him to f*** himself, but he hasn't f***ed himself. He should be f***ing himself, Your Honour.
Sustained.
Uh-oh. Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
And he's to go and he hasn't even gone. He's to go and f*** himself. And there's various places he could go. He could go over there up near the jury. He could go...
Go up his own arse to f*** himself.
He could go up his own arse to f*** himself. He could go up his arse to start with and f*** himself out. Back out his arse, for example. You know what I mean? Anyway.
He writes...
Okay, so it's been preempted by Henry. I feel more relaxed now. Yeah. Let's hear it.
I couldn't help but note something that was a touch lacking in season 3.
Okay.
Literally couldn't help. He couldn't help, could he? But notice it. Did he try to help but notice it? I reckon he maybe could have helped but notice it.
Okay.
I'm going to put that out there.
So, I couldn't help but note that something was a touch lacking in season 3. That is the lack of fresh, new... Fresh, clean and fresh jingles to delight our bean-filled ears.
Really?
We did receive the penetrating Patreon jingle.
Yeah.
Where to this day I find Ben's ominously foreboding urge that it's time to pay the ferryman popping into my head at literally any opportunity.
Patreon.com/3beansalad Well, that's working wonders, isn't it? That's the idea. It should be an earworm.
A little bird has told me that P&O Ferries may be on the verge of signing a deal to use that as part of their website offering.
Well, so you click onto pno.com and it goes, it's time to pay the ferryman.
Well, at the point where you know, you select your journey times,
yeah,
and then
it gives you directions to the ferry of the dead.
Gives you directions to the ferry of the dead,
which today is going to Cherbourg.
Have fun with our ghoulish undead crew. It'll all be a last journey over the River Styx death-themed ferry ride.
To not remember.
P&O Ferries is not liable if this ferry does sink and actually becomes a real, as well as metaphorical, ferry of the dead.
I can tell you're getting more of these VOs. I can't. You're getting very silky
now, especially the silky metaphorical terms and conditions. Very nice. Yeah.
Well, it's all about making that last syllable rich and smooth. It's all about the last syllable. It doesn't matter what the first syllables are. The first syllables can be really aggressive and nasty and horrible, but as long as the last syllable is rich and smooth, that's all anyone remembers, is the last syllable. You really notice that with the smooth VO types. That last syllable is like having the warm hands of a really great GP. holding on to your perineum.
Feeling their hot breath asking you to cough. And that hot breath travels up your urethra.
Yeah.
Bubbles through the piss in your bladder.
Yeah.
And it feels like you're a champagne flute.
Exactly. It's experiencing champagne from the flute's point of view. It's incredible.
Mike, I can't remember if you ever worked as a GP, but you obviously were a doctor.
Mm.
Did you ever employ the smooth final syllable when giving bad news, for example? Or
Only if I was trying to sell something at the same time.
Okay. So it might be a good idea for you to get a neck brace.
It does take the edge off, doesn't it?
It does. So anyway... So let's bear in mind. So he thinks we need more jingles. That's fine. Yeah. I'm up for that. And in fact, I was thinking maybe if listeners have ideas for jingles that we need to maybe come in with some suggestions. Anyway, now let's bear in mind the way that Henry reacted to the opening paragraph, which was fairly. I'm sorry to say, Henry was fairly innocuous.
He's punching it down clause by clause so far.
Yeah, well, this clause is going to set the night on fire.
Mm-hmm.
While re-listening to the podcast, I realised there was a consistently recurring theme that surely must require its own jingle to punctuate each occasion it returns. That is the phenomenon of the Henry blind spot.
He's furrowing his brow. I can see Henry furrowing his brow as we speak.
Whether it be forgivable, e.g. not knowing that octopuses have beaks.
Can I stay? I still don't know that octopuses have beaks. Carry on. And I will defend my right to not know that.
Henry, listen to me.
Yeah.
Octopuses have beaks.
You can say that as much as you like, but for me to know it, I would have to be pecked by an octopus.
In the meantime, your ignorance is a right.
Carry on.
Okay. So he thinks some of your blind spots are forgivable.
Quickly. Just quickly say something. Cars have blind spots. Cars, I think, we can agree, are pretty good.
There's this thing called climate change, and people are talking about cars. That's a bit of an issue, actually, whether or not cars are
good.
Just good, full stop.
Okay.
Henry's mindset is very much got a 50s diner. Waitresses bring him a burger on roller skates as he sits in his car.
ideally, petrol-powered sort of automatic roller skates. So this guy, I suppose, thinks that cars should have a kind of big glass dome on top of them, should they, and not have any kind of metal infrastructure.
I don't think we necessarily know what this guy thinks, because we haven't finished his letter yet.
Okay, carry on.
So he says they go from the forgivable, e.g. what we just talked about, to the downright mystifying, like not having the slightest notion of the difference between Celsius and Fahrenheit, or indeed rugs and carpets. That was fairly mystifying.
Okay. Well,
he says, I want this to be clear. This is not a Henry bollocking. Okay. I don't condemn these blind spots. I simply marvel at them. The reason I'm reading this out, Henry, is that I think David is wrong. I think we all have blind spots. Yeah. For example, the fact that none of us can confidently say what a fossil is.
Mm. Exactly.
And so maybe there is a jingle out there to be made for when we hit our blind spots. So I will work on that and we'll have one for a future episode. Also, as I said, if you've got ideas for jingles, do send them in.
I mean, dinosaurs are a bit of a blind spot, I'd say, for me. I mean, is it really? I mean,
you don't buy it.
It has always felt a bit far-fetched to me, because it's just so...
This is the Joe Rogan stuff we need to be doing. This is
it's so easy to commodify for children, turn into rucksacks, turn into chocolate snacks, meat.
Meat?
Turkey dinosaurs, you know. Well, turkey dinosaurs, meat shape.
I see.
It's so marketable to children as an idea. Gigantic lizards.
But that doesn't really make sense. It doesn't follow, does it, that gigantic sort of terrifying lizards are the things that children really go mad for?
You're right. It's they've been a surprising hit. I don't think any of the people that invented them in the 1950s could expect them to be as successful as they've been.
Which you're assuming is a sort of stationery and backpack company.
Yeah, I think...
Smiggle, effectively. You think dinosaurs were invented by Smiggle?
Smiddle? Smiggle?
Smiggle.
I don't know what Smiggle is either.
Smiggle is a...
Is this another case of, which happens quite a lot, of Mike confusing a small Exeter shop... it's an assuming it's a global mega chain.
He's talking about Mrs. Smiggle, who makes bags.
People come from all
Mrs.
over.
Mrs. Smiggle's pencil shop.
People come from Plimpton to go to Smiggle around these parts.
To go to Smiggle's?
Yeah. I've seen people coming in from Crediton taking the day off to come to Smiggle.
We had another email, which was another suggestion for a jingle. Basically, I can't find the email, but basically someone was saying there needs to be a provincial dad jingle for the times where Mike displays a sort of provincial dad mindset.
Yeah.
Mike, do you have any steer about what kind of genre of music I should be using for this jingle?
Route One, possibly, but I think has to be hard 80s dad rock.
Yes, please.
Giving way rapidly into some provincial folk music of the Shires, please, Ben.
Oh, nice.
It's time for Provincial Dad Chat.
Who's hit my bloody walking boots?
I'm not saying it's ruined the holiday, I'm just saying I asked for rum raisin.
Get your skates on, kids, otherwise we'll miss the inflatable session.
She's taking her mother to see Blood Brothers, which means more Top Gear time for me.
Why would I need to go and see a podiatrist?
Of course I've kept the warranty information, darling.
Okay, time for some emails. Thank you to everyone who's emailed. We've got quite a lot because we get quite a lot of inter-series emails.
Mm-hmm.
So between series 3 and this one, series 4, we've got a bit of a backlog. So
because we take a break, but the boys and girls in the post room are working solidly throughout that period, aren't they?
Yeah. And of course, bollockings never sleep. Do they?
Well, we could start with the bollocking if you'd like.
Let's get out of the way.
Let's have bollocking of the week.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading.
Listener bollocking of the week.
Bollocking Loaded.
Well, we've had a lot of emails, actually, where people, I think they're wary of setting a bollocking in motion because they've heard what happens.
They've heard how Henry reacts.
Yeah. So we've had a lot of emails where people say, well, this isn't necessarily a bollocking, but then when they go on to...
I see. Pussyfooting around it a bit.
Toad sandwich.
So this is Bill Hughes from near Seattle in the USA. The subject of the email is a non-bollocking query verging on chastising.
Mm. Okay.
A bollocking by any other name smells as sweet, I think.
There, by the grace of God, bollock eye. Yeah. It's... If it looks like a bollocking, walks like a bollocking, talks like a bollocking, sounds like a bollocking, it's a bollocking.
Yeah.
The bollock door has been closed, but the bollocks have already bolted.
Dear Beans, writes Bill, I'm writing to ask what your intentions were when you introduced the USA audience to the substance/condiment Branston Pickle. In several early episodes, your enthusiastic and frequent mention of Branston Pickle left the impression that you Beans and possibly all Brits are quite fond of it. Mm. So finally, I ordered and received some to try for myself.
Okay.
I started by applying it liberally to a turkey sandwich, and the result was that the taste of the sandwich was completely subsumed by the taste of Branston Pickle.
That's what it does, yes.
Yep, first step, correct, tick.
Then he tried a sandwich with only a light dusting of Branston Pickle. Same result.
Yep, everything checks out so far.
Yeah, it's a binary product. There is no such thing as a light dusting. It's on or it's not on. And when it's on, that's what you taste.
It's ones and zeros. Yeah.
Then he says he had a cheese sandwich, which was transformed into a Branston Pickle sandwich. No matter what I tried it on, the taste was completely obliterated by the taste of the Branston Pickle.
Yeah, I'm struggling to see what the problem is.
It seems like he's understood everything. He's got his food vector. You don't eat it neat. That would be uncouth. You put it on some sort of vector and shovel it in.
Yeah.
He writes, is Branston Pickle really meant to cover up the taste of food that has gone rancid? Does it kill any bacteria or microbes at the same time it destroys the taste? Why does Branston Pickle exist? And why have you suggested that we eat it? Bill from Seattle.
I'd simply refer Bill to the answer to the question of Bill's email. I would refer him to everything he wrote in the build-up to... The question at the end, that's the answer.
He already holds the answer. He holds the Branston Pickle in his mouth. Lies the truth.
He's got a pot of the answer in his fridge.
The strong, crunchy, vinegary flavour. It doesn't just obliterate the taste of your cheese or turkey sandwich. It obliterates everything. It's the ultimate mindfulness.
Yeah.
You can't think or sense anything else apart from the Branston Pickle. In your gob. So it's like you reset back to factory settings and then on with the rest of your day.
It's about being in the moment, as you say, Mike. It's about mindfulness. It's about being in the now. What is cheese? What is the flavour of cheese? Just observe it. Cover it in Branston Pickle. It's now taste of Branston Pickle. Flavour of turkey. Branston Pickle. Yeah. Everything is one pickle.
One pickle.
One pickle.
Sharon emails. Now, this is in response to us talking about going on tours of factories. We asked people if they've been on factory tours, where have they been and had they enjoyed it?
Yeah.
She writes, I myself many years ago went on a tour of the Baxter's Soup Factory in Speyside, Scotland. Unfortunately, the soup being manufactured that day was cock-a-leaky. The smell enveloped every inch of the building. And while standing on a platform overlooking the cooking vessels, I was overcome and momentarily passed out. She finishes by saying, still had to pay for my own soup and roll in the cafe. Sharon from Guildford.
It's funny, I've actually had a phase in between the two series, the last two series is, I've had a phase of getting into Baxter Soups, weirdly. The Royal Game, I wouldn't have wanted to be there on a Royal Game day.
What does that mean?
What is Royal Game?
Oh, it's one of the Baxter soups, because I've been getting into them recently. So they do... The ones I
you
like...
You don't want to see the antlers being tossed into the vats.
And the minor royals.
Yeah. And the less useful hounds.
You don't want to see dukes and antlers being pulverised.
No, if you're there on the day when the footmen go in, it's pretty horrific.
Especially if they're doing a chunky soup. No, thank you.
Carriage wheels.
Is there really a soup called Royal Game?
Yeah, there is. It's called Royal Game. It's a dark brown soup with little sort of flecks of
hide,
flecks of hide and hoof.
Whitney emails. This is an exciting email. Whitney says, "Hello, Beans. This isn't a bollocking,
right?
Unless it's a bollocking of myself.
Auto bollocking.
I'm from Mississippi, and I'm extremely susceptible to mimicking speech patterns. This podcast has led to my adopting far too many British expressions. Between y'all and my daughter constantly watching Peppa Pig, I sound like I'm involved in an absurd plot to trick the government into deporting me. I don't know that you can fully appreciate how absolutely ridiculous it sounds for someone from the Deep South to say a right bollocking."
I don't know. Is that even possible in a Mississippi accent?
Well, I have therefore attached an audio file of me saying it.
Oh, yes, please.
So I can send this to you.
That's good.
I just feel like, in solidarity for my plight, seeing as how I get a right bollocking if I accidentally use the expression a right bollocking, I think that y'all should have to introduce the word y'all into y'all's vocabularies, because I think you'll get a pretty similar reaction.
Oh, yes.
That was amazing.
Oh, that's superb. That is lush.
That was superb.
That is absolutely lush.
It actually sort of weirdly sounded right. Like, rad balcony. It sounded perfect. It sounded great.
You've got a lovely accent, Whitney. I love that.
Yeah.
That is superb. That,
anything sounds nice in that accent.
Rich, rich accent. Oh, if Baxter's could make that into a soup.
The right bollock soup.
Mississippi bollocking soup.
I think y'all is quite...
Yeah, so she writes, "I feel that in solidarity, y'all should have to add the word y'all to your vocabularies. I find it very hard to sort of say even. Y'all.
You all. Yeah, we don't bother with plural.
It's Y-apostrophe A-L-L, is it? Y'all.
Yeah.
You all. Y'all.
Should we be using ye? Should we be going back to ye then? Would that be an easier fit than y'all? Wasn't ye our old, the old y'all back in the day?
Was it?
What's thou?
What it is?
Thou is like you, informal singular. Like,
is it?
To or do.
Isn't it? Is it? What is it?
You know, like lots of languages have an informal and a formal way of saying you in the singular.
Ustedes. Usted.
Exactly. So that would be the
in
formal.
Spanish, isn't it?
Yeah. As I think the to version would be thou, I think.
And what's the?
I think that's the form one, isn't it?
Yeah, although if you start calling people thou, I don't think people are going to accuse you of being too informal now.
Hear ye, I think it is hear you all.
Actually, I think Ben, next time you're having some trouble, I'm talking about times in life when you have to address more than one person. I'm thinking, Ben, next time you're having some trouble with a group of teenagers.
Yeah.
Maybe if they're being noisy on a train or something, you can go over to them and go, look.
Silence ye.
or try it more informal. Like, look, guys. I know ye are young. Ye are just trying to have a good time. And look, I used to be like ye. You know, not that long ago, but I was one of ye. But if you could please just use headphones and don't have the volume up playing music on ye phones, okay.
Well, maybe, Whitney, that's what we do. Instead of... Because I don't think we're going to make it all the way to y'all. It's not sitting well, really. But maybe if we start saying ye...
Well, maybe someone can clarify our these and our thous and our yees and our yous somewhere.
The other American one I quite like is folks, or you folks.
Yeah.
I think I do find that quite adorable.
And folk instead of people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite homey, isn't it?
It's nice.
It's quite homey, but it's not always used in a homey way by Americans. Because sometimes it'll be like... I'm going to get out there, I'm going to tool up, and I'm going to kill some folks.
Yeah, you hear that a lot.
You do.
I don't think people have ever said that.
No, I think...
Time to drop some folks. I'm going to smoke some folks.
I think folks tends to be more positive, doesn't it?
I'm going to be the last folk you ever see. Gonna be the last folk ye ever see.
Y'all.
And Whitney signs off, yours, Mississippi Butterbean, Whitney.
What a, I mean, that's spectacular.
And then the other thing that we had a lot of emails about was our discussion of the concept of opposites.
Yeah.
Specifically, Henry's claim that up is not the opposite of down because they have more in common than they have difference.
Yes.
If someone managed to clear that up.
Lots of emails, as I say, but this one is from Luke in Cork. He says, Henry is surely correct when he states that up and down are in some sense alike, but it is this likeness, alloyed with their difference, that makes them opposites. For two things to be opposites, they must be conceptually linked in some way and yet have some sort of mutually contradictory effect. Therefore, the opposite of salt would not be pepper, but sugar. The opposite of a bollock is an ovary, and so the opposite of a bollocking must be an ovation. Oh. And the opposite of the Three Bean Salad podcast must be Sarah Koenig's cereal. A single woman's conjecture founded in fact, as opposed to many men declaiming truth based on rambling nonsense. Yours, Luke in Cork.
Oh, bloody hell. Touche, Luke in Cork.
So a lot to take in there.
He sees us.
Can I say, that was, I mean, in a way, you know, if it had to end, I'm glad it ended cleanly. Luke has beaten us. Luke's won. We've lost. Clean. Yeah. I always said, make it quick. If when the end comes, and that's it, we're done. So Luke now becomes the host of...
He becomes the bean.
He becomes the bean. Luke Bean Salad is our suggestion for working title.
Yeah.
So he takes on all the responsibilities. The
maintenance of the bean machine and the insurance
maintenance
costs.
Of the bean machine. He owns the copyright for the logo and all the bean art that's been produced so far. He can now sell us non-fungible tokens.
Yeah.
Now, the slight sting in the tail, of course, is the debt and the debt package.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we've always known that one of our listeners would eventually destroy us. We
thought it would be Spurbs.
We thought it would be Spurbs.
Yeah.
Spurbs has been quiet lately. But we put into place a series of financial measures whereby our debts are transferred to Luke now.
Unfortunately, Luke does have a pretty huge VAT bill and he will have to do Brazilian national service at some point, something we've been putting off for a long time.
And he'll have to do it for three people, so he'll have to do... Army, Navy, and ground admin.
Because they don't have an Air Force, do they, in Brazil?
they stick to admin instead.
their philosophy is there's nothing that can be achieved with Air Force which can't be achieved with good enough ground admin. Really, the amount of debt he's now saddled with puts him in a position where he could relieve himself of that debt. He has options. For example, he could try to have himself declared as a...
Out of warranty?
As an out of warranty electrical item.
Mm-hmm. What, sort of return himself to John Lewis?
He could claim he's a prototype for the most ambitious dual-lit toaster so far and try and return himself to John Lewis, whereby he and all his debts will become subsumed into the John Lewis mega debt. Obviously, John Lewis, because of the incredibly generous returns policy they've been running for decades.
The amount of money they owe to Le Creuset alone eclipses American national debt.
Many times over.
Yeah.
So that's one of his options. Another option is to declare himself a food. Obviously, there's no VAT on food. Food isn't taxable.
It is. Because, Henry, you're skating dangerously near to the old Jaffa Cakes cake or biscuit.
Oh, no. The court case should be Luke, human or BAP. She'll have to fight that case for years. So it could be that what ends up being his easiest option is to revert ownership of Bean Salad back to us.
Well, that would be the easiest thing, yeah.
Absolve himself of those responsibilities. Agree that... it's not that we're wrong and he's right so much as there is what we would call an unresolved pending fact
vortex.
Vortex.
So in a way, the podcast becomes like the Free City of Danzig set up in the Treaty of Versailles, in that nobody sort of really owns it.
Exporting quite a lot of tripe.
Yeah, it's not owned by anyone, and we're exporting huge amounts, tons and tons of tripe, canned tripe, across the world.
Yeah, which is not a terrible metaphor for
exactly.
And then we're sort of back to where we were at the before you started reading his email out. So I think,
I want to say to Luke is, if he agrees to that course of action, him not emailing us again, that'll be a tacit go ahead for that chain of events.
Yeah, that's fair.
So he won't even notice it happening probably, but he will for a short time own the podcast. Have the day, but he won't notice.
Exactly. So we can pre-revert ownership back to ourselves now, in a way. All he has to do, actually, is do nothing now. So it's really easy for him.
Well, so, I mean, watch this space, dear listeners. It could be a very different episode this time next week.
Yeah.
It could be considerably improved.
Yeah, if it's one bean salad featuring Luke.
I'd really enjoy listening to that, personally.
Then I'd say, first thing I'd say is good luck. Second thing I'd say is the Brazilian military make their beds in a very, very specific way. And
the Sao Paulo corners are very hard to get right.
Yeah, and if you do repeatedly get the Sao Paulo corner wrong, then it won't so much be a case of you enjoying your downtime on the Copacabana so much as you... So much as you being summarily executed. So.
in a metal hut.
So, but yeah, good luck.
Right, thanks to everyone for their emails. It's now time to take a short trip to the Sean Bean Lounge. If you want ad-free 3 Bean Salad episodes, or you want to access our bonus episodes, then you can do so at patreon.com/3beansalad. And those who join at the Sean Bean tier get entrance to the Sean Bean Lounge, where we were last night. And in fact, it was actually the annual Spring Awards Gala. And here's Mike with a report.
Roundup from the Sean Bean Lounge Spring Awards Gala. Also known as the Beanskers, also known as the Golden Bean Awards, also known as Gemma Richardson. Matt Diprose caused a stir on the red carpet by wearing Lawrence Kane's on account of Lawrence not being a designer but a strapless man. Scheduled host Spuds Malone cancelled last minute after putting a hoodie on backwards and getting stuck. Mercifully, Joe Threadle and his homeschool circus was able to step in and host the ceremony to wide acclaim and narrow Tommy Seddon, who'd been squashed in a lift door. Hannah Haskell won the award for Smallest Flash Mob, Charlie Markley took home the Big Blueberry, and Malcolm Smith was the longest Malcolm in his category. For his contribution to Beans, Tom McCann was awarded a lifetime supply of Sean Bean, Liz Cole was declared the Duchess of Now, and Steve Hayes was accidentally given away in a goodie bag. Joseph Jones, Best Fingers, Matt T, Best in Show, Dawn, Best of the Best, and Tori Vaz, Best Effort. Euclidean Panthers won the discretionary Euclidean Panthers Award, leading Belinda L to cry foul, accuse the committee of nepotism, and throw an egg so hard it still hasn't landed. Best Ian with Two Eyes went to Ian Alexander, who opined movingly in his speech that the category be renamed simply Best Ian, as he was aware of at least one Ian who didn't apply for the award, as despite spelling his name with two eyes, thought his eye patch made him ineligible. Angela Lillis bagged the Lifetime Achievement Award for the seventh year running, and James Scott won the Lifetime Underachievement Award. But having received that award, which is technically classified an achievement, was immediately declared ineligible and had to return it. That in turn made him re-eligible for the award, which was re-awarded, the process continuing long into the night and is believed to be ongoing at this time. Congratulations, one and all, except the losers.
Okay, time to work out whose theme tune or whose version of our theme tune is going to play out the show. There's 14. Blimey. So we've got 14 submissions. So one of you give me a number between 1 and 14, and that will determine which jingle is playing us out.
I'm going to do something you're probably not expecting and say 1.
Okay. So this is from Paddy Cole. Paddy's from Brighton. Paddy writes, here is my version of the Bean theme done in a dream pop style.
Thank you, Paddy.
Oh, he also writes, in response to your request for tour experiences, I once went on a tour of a bread factory in Vienna. We were all given white baker's hats and a Hessian sack full of rolls at the end. It was satisfactory.
Well, thank you, Paddy.
So thank you, Paddy, for sending in your theme tune. We'll play that out at the end of the show. And thanks to everyone for listening.
Thanks, everybody. Cheerio.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.